All right, everybody out there, what is going on? I'm live right now. We are live on the live stream. We are here with Quest Fanning, fan of the show, friend of the show. He goes by at Quest Fanning over there on Twitter, and he's a self-proclaimed liberty guy. Really excited to have him on. And the title of the episode today is Privatize Everything. We've had some controversy in as of late about the schools, about the post office, things like that. So we're going to talk about some liberty related topics today. Thank you so much for coming on, Quest. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it, Steven.
So you homeschool already, correct?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So did you, did that come out of necessity, out of, you know, desire, or what?
Well, we always had a concept that we'd like, have our daughter have some augmentation of her education, no matter what, you know, and, we couldn't afford to send her to private school. I mean, my brother and I were private school, the places that we went to when we were kids, like 45 grand a year and up now. So that's kind of A little steep.
Whoa. I believe it. I just hadn't looked into it. But when so I guess it's so I can always be surprised when someone says something to me that, like, but that makes sense. I mean, because you got a family that makes, you know, a rich family might be 200 grand a year, 300 grand, like a really, like, so it makes sense. But it, is that an upper level, like expensive for private, or is that like normal?
You know, for private schools, it's pretty much par for the course around here. I mean, I think there are other places where it's less expensive, but, you know, I mean, you could find like a good Catholic school for like 15 or something like that, yeah. You know, in high school, probably 15, 20, something like that.
Yeah, it makes sense. So what type of curriculum do you do at home?
Well, you know, let me just say this first. Before we send her off to, we actually just sent Franny off to pre-K briefly. Mm-hmm. And before that, we had already been kind of, you know, building a little bit more formality into how we were teaching her. And but then it was a very negative experience with, we spent about a month, month and a half there and then came back. You know, we have, there's a certain level to which things are very formal, and the certain level to which things are more like learning, taking the opportunity to learn, you know, like, you know, we like to travel. We like to
I see.
Be able to build layers of things.
Yeah. So it's like a freedom thing as well as you know, like well-rounded type deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of it is also just kind of like letting her express her own passion and, you know, not quelling that desire to learn.
Yeah. You know? Do you think that's, I mean, I've been saying it for, do you think public schools, like just crush individuality and like,
oh, absolutely.
They make school ants, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's on obedience. The socialization thing, socialization really odd. Like if you're a grown person, you know, it's like to socialize, you know, you deal with people and then you say, I don't want to deal with that guy. I'm not going to deal with that guy. You know, that's, you know, freedom of association, freedom to associate, freedom not to associate. And, you know, you got somebody in your job that you don't like, you can quit, you know, that kind of thing. But in schools, you have a much more rigid environment. You know, it's important to learn how to deal with difficult people, mm-hmm. but, you know, to a reasonable extent, rather than, you know, I'm going to be dealing with this person for the next, you know, X many years.
Yeah, you can't leave. You can't. Yeah, a bad boss is different than like a bad teacher, because a bad boss, I mean, you do have a little bit of freedom. Like, I get it if someone's really poor, if they are in a terrible situation, there's always outliers, but you can just quit and start your own business. Now, you might not be successful, but if you're in a school, I mean, I think there's a Michael Malice quote where he says, you know, public schools are literal prisons where it'll probably most likely be the only time kids face violence in their entire life. Mm-hmm. So they can't leave. It's funny. I was just thinking, it's literally kidnapping. It's like a kid. You have a kid. And yeah. So, and you just didn't want your daughter to face that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we do a great variety of things. And, you know, this shutdown has been a bit difficult for us because, you know, we live in New York City and we make very good use of the museums. It used to be like every Friday, Kate and Franny would go to the Museum of Natural History, often go to the Discovery Room where they have like a special behind the scenes stuff going on.
Cool.
And, you know, so it's been a little more difficult. It's been a little bit more difficult to be social, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, she had been doing Taekwondo, very, you know, kind of like a leader within her class. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of Spanish. Don't try to get me to speak Spanish just yet, you know, but, you know, we've been, you know, she's been doing a lot of Khan Academy kids stuff too. So that's really a useful resource. And, but also, you know, like just day-to-day interactions, being able to deal with adults and being able to, you know, she acts more like an adult. Now, I'm not saying she's not having fun and being a kid, but she's not like, I don't know. She doesn't have this like switch between, okay, this is, you know, she's respectful, but she doesn't have the switch between, you know, okay, this is someone my age, I can act this way. This is someone, some, you know, older. She's got friends who are like 9 or 10 years old. She's got friends who are like, you know, like my nephew's 3, you know, just, you know, it's not really hard for her to switch gears and stuff like that.
Okay, that's good. That's like a mark of maturity. That's you know, that's, I've been thinking about it too, because I'm trying to work on my swearing. I mean, on my solo show, I swear way too much. And I think that's kind of like, you know, if you can have a hone, you know, your character so you can act the same around everybody, that's a good thing, because, you know, it means you'll be calmly like rebuking people when they're saying bad things. You'll be, you know, teaching people, and it's just, everything's calm and like and normalized, you know, and that's what I think needs to be normalized, is the education starting at home. I mean, it's true whether you like it or not. That's what my opinion on homeschooling, like, it starts at home either way. Like, I don't have a family, I don't have kids, but if you don't teach them until they're in school, like, imagine not teaching your kid until they get sent away.
That's one of the key things about why, one of the main points for starting schooling early is, that if you come from a lower socioeconomic background, you are, by the age of, what is it, I think 3, you've had 3 million less words spoken to you.
Whoa.
So you're not very, you know, conversational. You're not getting the layers. And so, there, you know, to some degree, there might be some validity to the point of like, you would do well to be around an educated person, you know, that kind of thing. But you know, we're so much more cocky than that, you know?
Yeah, we're so cocky. Yeah. Yeah. It's very hard for a human to admit that they don't know what they're doing when something's emotionally close to them. It's very, very hard to backtrack and say, like, the more years and more time you spend thinking you're right, the harder it is to admit you're wrong. I mean, we'll get into politics later, but I think that's why they can't look at Joe Biden. That's why they can't, like, the people that are on his side, they can't like look at this child sniffing or the dementia, mm-hmm. because it's 3 years of this. But it's same thing with schools. I think we have generations in public schools now. And our parents to admit that these are bad would to admit that their parents did bad. And it's like this cycle. Do you know when it started, like the Austrian schooling system? Do you know what I'm talking about? Can you tell people just a little bit about what that is?
Okay. Well, that was you're talking about the Austrian schooling, like the schooling system.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the Austrian economics. Yeah. Like Austrian, like child schooling system.
Yeah. Right? Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm an Austrian economic. Yeah. I'm free markets as well. But yeah.
You not want to mix those two up.
Exactly. Yeah. The Austrian schooling system.
Yeah. Well, basically it was about creating a citizen and a citizen who's compliant.
No.
It was about, you know, it's about like making sure that everybody kind of marches to be the same drummer. It's great for making factory workers, really good for that. Not very good for creative types. Not very good for people who can think out of the box and make solutions. You know, because I remember one time I was at a lunch with astronaut Charlie Cromarty. This is through my grad school, you know, as an alumni event. And one of the most interesting things he said was the huge mistake we make in our education system is pretending that there's only one solution to the problem. You don't come up with creative solutions. You don't come up with solutions that to problems that don't have a solution yet without being creative. So, right. I mean, that's very important. Back, I think it was 1852 was the first compulsory schooling law in the U.S. And that was pushed by Horace Mann. And he was it was kind of a reaction to immigrants. It was saying, you know, we had this nice Protestant country where everything was cool and everybody knew what was what. And, you know, we can kind of slip in a little non-secular stuff into the secular schools and what when we did have schools. But then these Catholics started coming here, you know, and there was questions about their intelligence, about their work ethic, about, you know, about what immoral things they're teaching their children. And so, you know, this, the appeal of the Austrian school kind of came about. Meanwhile, Horace Mann himself, is a guy who pushed for compulsory schooling and guy in many states and all this other stuff. He homeschooled. He still homeschooled his own kids.
There it is. Rules for thee, not for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of built up, you know, this change to the factory work and all that stuff also kind of took parents out of home more. So that also kind of leads to being more kind of a convenience issue to, you know, here, have my kid, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, man, that's pretty bad. I mean, so here, so you're a Liberty guy. Do you think, you know, I'm going to ask a couple of different things about Liberty over the next couple of minutes. But so as far as what my main question for Liberty people, and I'm a Liberty person, is like, do you want like public school to be outlawed, or do you just choose not to use it? Like, how far do you think it's so bad that it should be illegal? Like, there should be no government school, or do you just, you know, what do you think about that?
That's it's a little bit rough to say, but I think it from a realistic point of view, from a practical point of view, it's which you know, obviously means that I'm not a libertarian. I'm just a Liberty guy.
Yeah.
I'm actually trying to be practical, but you know, it's very ingrained. It's been normalized. There are a lot of things that aren't good that have been normalized. You know, if something's a status quo, people kind of assume that's okay. Mm. And that's a word I use a lot, normalized, because it's Board of Education created like the year after I was born, 1980, right? Has education gotten a lot better since then? I don't think so. There's pretty much consensus no.
Intelligence certainly has gone down.
But,
yeah.
But now if you say get rid of the Board of the Department of Education, you'd be like, what? That's never happened before. Let's, it's like, well, 40 years ago, there was none,
yeah,
you know?
Man. Yeah, it's so crazy.
If you know, part of this is school choice. I can't tell you what I would do with. I honestly wouldn't spend it all if I had the whole $25,300 a year that is being spent on a child in New York City public schools, or the over $15,000 a year that's being spent on average for the average school kid. But
wow,
if you know, how about you just give me back my family's contribution first? You know, how about I not pay for a system I'm not using, in addition to having one less income in my household and all the expenses I'm incurring?
Yeah.
You know, that'd be a step. But school choice, one thing that I think a lot of people don't understand is that the way the schools are, public schools are funded, is in chunks. So it could be a very gradual process. You start with money from the federal government being winnowed away and redirected. You don't suddenly collapse the school. Suddenly you have a little bit more flexibility of funds. You have more ability of homeschoolers to have resources. And you have also, you know, some more resources going toward more affordable private schooling. I mean, Catholic schools are great for the work that they've done with minority communities and helping folks, you know, first generation to college, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, it's very similar to public schooling in a way, but the quality control works in a different way, you know? I mean, I'm not going to knock public school completely. You know, I think it's full of people who are dedicated and really believe in helping children. The thing is that I think that, you know, when you're in a system, you tend to think of things as being that way. So you kind of put the blinders on. It's like, no, if we start to bring funds there, then this is just going to fall apart, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, well-intentioned people might be, you know, come up as enemies in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's happening right in front of us. I think that it's very interesting how, you know, certain buzzwords can kind of, you know, they call them trigger points for a reason, but it's almost the same thing. Like, I'm pro-police. I'm not a fan of abolishing the police, but a lot of people got triggered by the defund the police thing. To defund something is just to divert funds and make the end result be less funds. You know, so I'm still pro-police, but like, governments allocate funds in a different way every single day. Sometimes they have to divert from the police. And that's the same thing with education. Like, I want education defunded for sure, but that doesn't mean I'm anti-education. Like, I'm a kid's music teacher. Like, I want to be a professional educator. So I'm actually like very pro intelligence and stuff. But yeah, I like what you're saying, where it's, you know, there's well-intentioned good people everywhere. Some of them maybe aren't, I don't know. There's definitely bad people out there as well. But yeah, I mean, like a lot of your far right types like me or whatever will say that they just want to homeschool. They want to homeschool. And I'm like, I do want to homeschool, but I would also start a school in a town. Like, what's the difference between homeschooling and being on a street with 10 families you trust and just having a school? Well,
that's the question I actually kind of wanted to ask you was how do you envision, and you know, and there's no perfect answer, but how do you envision keeping that creativity? You know, there are times when, you know, I got to bring Franny back to focus, you know, this is what we're working on. This is the thing, you know, like, you know, her hero is Mae Jemison, you know, because she can do everything, you know, astronaut.
Oh yeah.
Dancer, you know, all around like talented person, right. Who specifically made a point of not just doing one thing. Right.
Yep.
But I said, you know, when Mae Jemison was you know, studying her science, she was not also just like, you know, every 2 seconds, you know, getting up and dancing.
Yeah.
You know, there is still something to be different discipline in.
Yeah. And yeah. Well, I mean,
hard working grit.
Yeah. The way I would answer is like, kind of like the way I teach music, and when I kind of dip into the other subjects when I'm just randomly with my students, is I teach from like a general yet flexible perspective. One of the biggest things I got, one of the few things I would say until I started partying when I was like 16 or whatever, from there on school was out. Basically, I'm a college dropout, but before then, some of the biggest things I got out of school was kind of independent study projects where they're like, hey, you have to do something on some sort of religion, but you can do it your way. And you have to check back in once a day. So I actually think that within discipline comes freedom. So if you, I think that you could very much promote individuality and creativity and wanting to, like, the child or the student cultivating their own path within a box or a discipline. So I also am just a big fan of like classical Greek stuff, like learning how to debate another side of the, like the different side of the point, writing, public speaking, entrepreneurship. So I don't know if you ever looked into the Ron Paul curriculum before. Have you ever looked into that?
Briefly, it seemed like it was a little bit more for older kids.
It's definitely not for younger kids, but like it I don't know what it says K-12, but I think the way they brand it is for like high schoolers, because they talk about, you know, classical debate and things like that. But I would just also, what I would do is also focus on doing stuff with your hands as well.
Yeah.
Like building things, like trades. I think that's very underlooked, or overlooked, I should say. And then I would get people to help me that know what they're doing. You know, because I don't know all these subjects, but I think that I would be trying to go the opposite route of worker bees. Like, I would try to build a curriculum that really, really focuses on the individual and, you know, and production, not factory production, but like creative production and like furthering, whether it's technology or like whatever the field is.
One thing you can really leverage, I think, is that. You know, I think that there's over intervention in a way. Like, you could have people doing separate things in the same room to a much greater extent than I think a lot of people trust the student to. I mean, you know, it's easy to get distracted, but you know, if you have someone, a mature adult there to just like kind of keep an eye on you, make sure you get back on track. And then when they need help, they'll come to you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but having a certain trust, I think that's one of the things that's very difficult to, like, you know, when you are looking at a rigid system, when being more familiar with a rigid system where it's like very top down, very centralized, very, you know, that kind, very rigid. You know, I mean, inevitably you'll hit hiccups no matter what approach you take, but I think a lot of it comes down to trust.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard to, it's like, there's just so much responsibility there. Cause you can, I don't know what the ratio is, but it's like, I don't know. It feels like almost 20 to one. You got to do like 20 trust building things for every one that you violate. It depends on the size of the violation. You know, like, I've sometimes told students that we're going to do something at the end of the class that's fun, and I just forget. And they think that I'm actually trying to not make it fun, and they're crushed. And I'm like, no, dude, little man, like, I just forgot. I'm
wrong people. You.
Yeah. But I, you know, the trades and so, you know, yeah, building trust is really important. And one thing I've really realized over the past year with instructing is most kids know how to do something. They don't know how to do it right. So like they'll like they, if you're like, hey, this is playing guitar, they can like make that motion. And so like good teaching is really correction. You know, it's not, it's, you show them the initial thing, of course, but then you have to really correct them and let them do it on their own. Correct, adjust.
Perfect practice makes perfect.
Yeah, perfect practice makes perfect. So I like what you're saying about, you know, just having an adult to oversee while they work. And kids are so smart, man. They get it. But I think that adults do a lot of damage. Like really over interfering adults, they do a lot of damage. You agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one that it's very difficult to know what to do. And I mean, I have like, you know, I have a little bit of a temper, and I also have like, you know, I also have, you know, a sense of discipline that, you know, was cultivated. So I have to balance that, you know, am I getting angry right now that you're kind of screwing up or screwing around, and you know, you just made the language problem hang, you know, because you said it wrong too many times, you know,
yeah,
or whatever.
The same way, man. Yeah, that's funny. I think that's guys too. I think that, you know.
Oh
yeah, it's just guys.
That's something. Well, on gender is like I think that there's an underestimated value to the role of fathers and of other, you know, male mentors. Mm. Because for both female and male children, because I, you know, the dad's the one who's going to like push the kid further than what the, you know, the chart or age appropriate blah 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 says, and that's how you discover what the kid's good at and you know, their passions and stuff like that. And you know, I'm not saying that every mother is going to be coddling or anything like that, but you know, there's you know, a value to that, and to having someone involved that's like, go ahead, you know, you can do more than this. You may be able to pull that on your mother, but not me. You know,
that's more. So important, man. You'll never grow without a little bit of stretch. Awesome, man. So let's talk about the post office for a little bit. So you're in the chat the other day where there's a whole, you know, most people know, but we'll set it up. There's a post office debate going on, you know. Trump says some stuff, they misinterpret it, or he's, you know, he's also trolling them. So I don't know what the deal is. Like, so they got this controversy. We're doing mail-in balloting, things like that. Do you think the post office should be privatized?
Yes,
you do. You think it should be not government at all, and it should be, because it's kind of the same question that I'm asking about schools that I am about the post office. Because you just said there should be school choice. Meaning there should still be government schools, but you don't think there should be government mail at all, or should there be also a private postal service?
Well, it's very difficult, because I think that the biggest hindrance to everything that the post office has been doing has been playing to the least useful things. You know, it's like if you say I'm going to reduce rural mail service to you know, to 3 days a week, and I'm going to reduce remote mail service to once every week or once every 2 weeks, you know, you have a constituency there who's going to get pissed off.
Yeah.
You know, including some of our friends, probably, you know. You know, I got a lot of friends who live in rural areas, and I bet that they would be annoyed if suddenly, you know, things became less comfortable. The moment you ask someone to shoulder a little bit of pain, a little bit of discomfort, it becomes much more of a pain point. You know, it's Nick Gillespie said the other day that it's only because we need the post office less nowadays, you know, and we have alternatives and stuff like that, that we get nostalgic about it, you know, that we kind of forgive the faults, you know. I think that the key thing about privatization would be that it would free your hands from Congress. I mean, it doesn't even need to be that different. You could practically have the same people running the place. Just don't get Congress in the way, you know. Congress is going to be like, you know, you can't restrict this route. You have to have this many mailboxes. You know, that's, I mean, the same people, same Congress people who will talk a good game about and be tough on the post office are going to be the first belly achers. You know, they have no grit. They have no grit. They have no, you know, ability to withstand pain. And that's unfortunate. And so cutting them out of the loop is pretty much the key issue. You could have the same thinkers who have been trying to fix things at the post office, and they'd be doing a heck of a lot better if all the times is important. You know, it's like, you know, Congress says no. If you get that out of the way, then you can do it much better. I mean, my mom used to smoke, right? very heavy smoker. And her doc, she would follow the letter, every single letter, like just every minute detail that her doctors wanted, except quitting smoking.
Really?
One day I'm in my dad's home office and we get a call and we come downstairs and she's already turning blue. Ooh. Right? I call the ambulance. I run out to the curb and I'm looking at the time. It took exactly 4 minutes for them to get there. Right? It felt like forever. They come in there and she's so, you know, clogged up, not breathing properly, that when they were trying to put the oxygen mask on her, she's pushing away because it feels like a suffocating. She's not thinking rationally at that point, you know. Oof. Basically, she visited her doctor the next day, and he said, if you smoke another cigarette, you will die, right? So, you know, it's like people can be very much, you know, good on certain things, but then, you know, the important things are what matter.
Yeah, that's like a crazy – that's a – I don't know. It's like almost, I feel like almost, I don't know if you call that cognitive dissonance or just like selective, you know, philosophy or whatever, but it's
compartmentalization.
Yeah, exactly. And
I think they all fall into that category. Yeah.
And it feels like almost every person has one of those things. And all you can do is make sure it's something not so important. Cause everyone has blind spots. Like
Or be willing to admit it.
Yeah.
Now
or
then,
be willing to admit it.
Don't have to do it all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Not to be constantly, you know, pulling off the Band-Aid.
Yeah, one of the most common arguments. I mean, I don't know if I'm playing devil's advocate right now. I mean, I certainly think that more privatization, more localization, smaller government is better. But one of the and this could get into the whole like, but they're a free company, big tech censorship thing. You know, one of the biggest arguments about no privatization of the mail is it's constitutionally protected free speech, you know. And then like and so there is one place, I mean, speech is speech, but like at least there's one bastion of free speech. I'm totally steel manning their argument right now. Do you think companies, what should companies have to do when they're not protecting free, or what should the government do when companies aren't protecting free speech? In, you know, if there's no mail service anymore, FedEx can just shred anything they want in a big censorship world. So what's the answer to that if it's privatized?
That's a difficult one. I think that if you look at at the realistic modes in which people communicate now, it's not through the mail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty much the solution to it. I mean, you know, I floated it half jokingly. I floated the idea of okay, how about we give in on net neutrality. Net neutrality is a thing, and we get rid of post office.
Mm.
You know, there you go. Mm. But, you know, it's half joking, but it's on the same plane, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so it's like I've just seen people say that, like, at least there's a place that can't shut you down. Now, it's a little bit of a, I don't know, it's a little bit kind of conflating two subjects, and that's online censorship and the mail. But you're right, just almost no one uses it. It's just because it's an election year, man.
For junk mail.
Yeah. Most of the things I get are complete crap, or not to me, to some Asian lady, you know. But. Do you think that there's going to be fraud this year? Do you think there is already election fraud in the mail?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, you expect what you've seen in the past, you know, that there is a higher rate of fraud, a higher rate of, just inaccuracy, when you have mail vote, and it's kind of, it's known that the absentee ballots, you know, sometimes you don't even look at the absentee ballots when you know, okay, the in-person voting has, you know, this person won 95%. You know, look, we got like 12 ballots over here. Are we going to, you know?
But in swing states and places where it's tight, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, and I'm not going to pretend to, but it's always by a slim margin in, you know, less than 8 states. If we're talking about the presidency, and, you know, so they're going to do something's. I mean, we've already seen dead people in Michigan being registered to vote. Before I continue, so do you like identify as a Republican, a conservative, not a libertarian? Like, what, where do you fall in that whole thing?
Well, let's see. That's difficult to say because, yeah. I mean, I try to go by the candidates. You know, I mean, you're familiar with YAL, right? Young Americans for Liberty.
Sure. Yeah.
I love the work they do. I support it financially. I try to do a little bit more promoting it. I should probably do more of that because they're pretty much the only ones out there doing something that really, really works. And you know, that idea of creating state level legislatures that have more liberty candidates and they vet people and you know that they follow up, you know, like someone doesn't do what they're, you know, doesn't act the way that they said they were going to act when they're in government, then you have to, you know, primary them. Mm. You know, but I'm registered a Democrat.
Wow. Okay.
I'm here in New York. I like to vote in my local elections and have it actually matter.
That's a good point.
I admire the idea of the idea. There's authoritarianism and there's libertarianism, mm-hmm. And then there's left and there's right. I think the ones doing a lot of good, especially at state level in different areas, especially I'm familiar with, because I watch Austin Peterson so much, I'm pretty familiar with what's going on in Missouri. They have a lot of good liberty legislators there who are, you know, who are liberty Republicans, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that that's realistically the most viable most of the time.
I do too. Yeah. I unfortunately, because I think the GOP is pretty cringy myself. I think all the parties are pretty cringy, but that's why I'm, just in the last month or so, I've begrudgingly said I'm a Trump supporter, because it's not like I don't love the guy. I think he's funny. I think he's like a very funny, like stand-up comedian, essentially. He's very entertaining, but it's like, look at the situation. It's more a comment on the situation we're in. And to me, the facts on the ground is that one of these two people are going to win. You can do the spoiler vote, but the LP is so cringy, and I don't stand for what the left libertarians, the big L's, stand for. So it's like, in what, what do you do other than you? And so it's like kind of four choices. If you like liberty, there's Joe Biden, Donald Trump, Joe Jorgensen, or abstain, or write someone in, I guess. You could do that. But at that point, I do think there is the two wings of the same bird argument. I do believe in that. I don't think right and left are like they both kind of suck, and they both are kind of not informative. But I think one is way better than the other. I mean, I think the culture of the Democrats, not like the poli- but like the destruction of property, the race narrative, those things are, I'm so opposed to that it's like, what do you do other than Trump?
I'm trying to remember the three. For some reason, I'm vaping right now. It's just like some people value equality most of all. Some people value freedom most of all. You know, and there's a third one. I'm sorry, but basically, you know, there's no way that you're gonna find a perfect formula there.
Right.
You know? I think I've been somewhat disappointed with Donald Trump because you know what he's promised to do is not quite what he's done. I think that I've kind of agreed with the idea of bringing some of these swamp dwellers to do things in cabinet positions, but it hasn't turned out as well as I'd hoped. You know, I was like, it's like, okay, you know the ropes, you're going to help me do this thing. But then he doesn't take enough of an active role in saying, okay, no, this is what I want to do. I mean, I love that he fired Bolton, but what the hell is Bolton doing there to begin with?
That's the thing. Yeah. It's been, he's not stayed on message. And that's why I wasn't really, that's why I wasn't into it until about a couple months ago, until these riots, until these protests things. Since then, I've been on the Trump train.
One of my friends I play soccer with, and I usually drive him home afterwards. He's from Belarus. He's a very big, strong guy.
Wow.
Interesting dude, but very intelligent guy. But we had these conversations driving the car and often talked about Trump and stuff like that. And he kind of had the impression that, you know, the Democrats are the good guys. And, you know, he coming from Eastern Europe, he's kind of like pro, socialized medicine and stuff like that. Right. And so, you know, we had to see each other for a few months, and he said, and, you know, we were talking about, okay, we're probably gonna start up again. Right. With the games. And he says to me, oh, by the way, I really want you to know that I'm now pro Trump. These riots have changed my mind. And, you know, it's like, I thought that the Democrats were the good guys. They are not the good guys. They're, you know, the Republicans are bad guys and the Democrats are worse bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's very easy just to be on the on team anti-destruction of property. That's where my line is. I'm like, I'm just very opposed to destruction of private property. So, well, and you people are beating up people that are private business owners.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing is once you slip into, Brad Palumbo says something in an article recently where he's basically was like that once you slip into saying it's okay to destroy property, which is also kind of playing to the Marxist idea that there should be no private property. Once you say it's okay to destroy private property, which rights are we not going to be, are not on the table?
It's all out the window at that point.
Is your life on the table? Is your personal security, is protecting your family?
Yep.
I mean, you know, where does it, once you're willing to, if you're willing to put someone else's rights on the chopping block, where does it stop?
Yeah. That's why it's like there is a little bit of a straw man argument, but they say like, you know, like why is property more important than life? And it's like, you know, when you put it like that, maybe
how many people got killed in these rights.
Exactly.
Too?
Exactly. So it's not even to mention that that life doesn't even matter that much in these rights. But the reason that your life matters more than my pencil when you're trying to steal it from me is because of the point you just made. Is that where's the line? Then you can steal my computer. Then you can steal my kid. Then you can steal my money. And it's
like I'll pump you full of lead.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh yeah. Yeah. It's like, but like at a certain point, it's not about the, like what it's not about my chewing gum. It's about the aggression and people have just had enough. And you know, so these, like, you know, everyone knows the people in St. Louis, the lawyers that have the guns out. It's like, They're like these rich people.
Oh, by the way, you like my shirt?
Oh yeah, that's right. I was gonna say. I think that's gonna be a underrated Halloween outfit this year. If there is a Halloween, is be the McCloskeys.
Yeah,
you can definitely pull it off. But yeah,
it was between this and I got an orange shirt from what's it called? What was it?
Orange shirt bad.
It's from a prison. Community. You must be indicted to be invited.
Yeah. I could see you as the librarian of the prison, like the Andy Dufresne, something like that. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's my thoughts on Trump or whatever. I think it's going to be a crazy election. Do you think there's going to be any more, you know, do you think there's going to be any more big events that aren't political between now and then? Like people are saying, like, think there's going to be like a shooting or a, you know, a bomb.
Oh, you mean like false flag?
Yeah,
stuff.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
I mean, we do have the stuff with I'm surprised we haven't had one yet because, you know, digging into the stuff about Bill Clinton and his connection to Epstein being a little bit more solid than previously known, you know, so I wouldn't be surprised at all about that. If you don't mind, can I just talk about Trump for a moment?
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the areas of disappointment that I think he really has made an effort in is I think of the swamp is two parts. One is the lobbyists. And I think he hasn't done well enough to push back against that culture. If anything, he's kind of accepted it a little bit more because he has a certain pragmatism that sometimes he aligns with liberty virtues and sometimes he's just like, ooh, this is popular, you know? But he's pushed back against the other part of the swamp, which is the bureaucracy and the idea that there are regulations that usurp the position of law. And there are regulators and there are other, you know, less visible bureaucrats who seem to think that they should be able to run the show because they, you know, because they know the ropes and they know the way things are and they know all that other stuff. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that there's no value to institutional knowledge, but I'm also saying that, you know, if you're going to tear down the size of government, you shouldn't be dependent on people who see the growth of government as their business.
Right. Yeah. That's
I'm cutting the regulations. I just generally cutting the regulations. I love.
Yeah, I mean, and so I don't know if he's stayed true to this, but there was during the campaign, it was like for X number of regulations passed, we have to get rid of X number.
Oh, you've been cutting like crazy.
Yeah, you have been good.
Good job on that. I want a lot more of that in the second term.
Yeah, and the federal judges part has been really good too.
The yeah. Ninth Circuit. What the heck?
Yeah.
That's like a U-turn there.
Yeah, isn't that that's the
California one.
Yeah, it just happened the other day, that second or the magazine size.
And yeah.
Yeah, so I've been told that might go to the Supreme Court or something like that. We have a relative expert in the chat right now who lives out there, has been following it very closely for a couple of years. But yeah, I mean, that's great. I think it's great. I don't know how it. Here's another kind of like, 4D chess angle. It's like, what if draining the whole swamp, poisons the lake, for lack of a better word. So like, I don't think that's true, but like, I think there's certain things that Trump can't do. I would love to see the whole swamp drained, but like, I think that he's kind of being held up by things that, like, there's people that rank Trump, so I think that he has to be kind of careful about axing everybody or just telling, every single person of old to pound sand.
I'm not a big QAnon believer.
Me neither,
but I do believe that there is something to the very basic tenet that it's dangerous to tread on certain people's toes.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So
I don't think it's nearly as formulated and such as some other people would think. I'm not trying to, cast aspersions on anybody for being a deeper believer in it. But I think that you should always be willing to examine your assumptions. And I think the conspiracy theory. You know what a conspiracy theory is? It means that there's more than one person involved. That's basically what a conspiracy.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So basically, anything involving government, that's a conspiracy. But I think that a lot of the stuff that we've been told were just silly conspiracies, and you should be wearing tinfoil hat and stuff like that. Honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, Alex Jones has brought a lot to light.
Dude, Alex Jones is like, there are things that I think that he shouldn't have done, shouldn't have said, but like, in as far as general percentage, Alex Jones is the man. He's the man. Like, so to me, it's almost everything is I know that binary thinking isn't good, but if you go from a binary perspective, that's just a sorting mechanism. If I say these two statements, Q is 100%, which is the more like outrageous statement? Q is 100% real, and there's no such thing as the deep state. It's so like there's people that say there's no deep state. I think there's something literally wrong with them.
this comes back to what I was saying before about normalization. What is normal? What is status quo? Oh, the government just gets bigger at a greater rate than the economy. That's normal. Yeah, that should be normal.
That's
right?
Impossible. It can't last.
Yeah, yeah, and I get so angry just thinking about what we're doing to future generations with the debt we're
saddling. It's so dark. Yeah,
and this like magical thinking. It's basically magical thinking. Now there's nobody that's fighting against the debt, and to pretend that you're going to be able to do wealth tax. Yeah. Germany and Sweden have both done it. And, I don't think that the people in their governments are stupid people who have none of the capabilities of the people in our government, yet, as has historically happened, the most wealthy have been able to skirt them, I mean, back when our top tax rate was 99%, right? Or no, it was 95%, something like that. To be taxed, you had to be making like $500,000 a year. And then the next level was when you're making over $1 million a year. Mm-hmm. And it went up even more, right? And middle class and upper middle class, and way up into even being pretty rich was taxes, right? But if you look at that top tax rate, almost every single individual who fell into that class had an exemption written into law.
Yeah, dude, it's a cabal. So, it's the mafia, man.
Every tax is gonna come back down to the middle class. Every attempt to gain money by killing the golden goose is going to end up biting us. Biting people who work for a living.
Yeah. What do you how do you solve it? I mean, because it's
spend less.
What if we're not? I mean, like, the thing is that we're not. I don't – unless we get a –
not populist. People don't like pain.
Stop going populism, back to, you said?
People don't like pain. Yeah, it's not popular. going back to the whole school thing for a sec, it's like, you know, there was a study. I'm sorry, no, it wasn't a study. There was a school in Harlem that was very highly endowed, that was given every financial advantage and all kinds of, you know, great stuff, right? From the material perspective, and they recruited great teachers and you know, they had very high ambitions, and like practically everybody went into college. 5 years later, the vast majority of them hadn't graduated college. You know, 5 years after graduation, the vast majority of the folks who came out of that school that had been failing before had not graduated college. They'd either dropped out or were having to restart and you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, wait a second, that doesn't seem like it's a great success.
Yeah.
That's because what determines success is not resources, it's grit. It's having the ability to withstand pain and to get back up, that kind of thing. And that's kind of hard to teach.
It's so hard. I mean, it takes a ton of failure. That's really what it's like, failure and like support. And yeah, it's kind of like you have to burn the dead wood, like, and unlearn stuff, fail and keep going. It's so hard to build grit. I think it's kind of the number one thing that if you could bottle and sell it, that would be, it'd be the number one thing you want over like being in good shape, or like, it's like just fortitude.
And that's the thing as a parent, like, you know, I want my child to be happy, but I want her to have lasting happiness. Mm. I want her to have, like, you know, meaning and productivity and, you know, a sense of something deeper that, you know, won't come from everything being easy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I went a little off track.
No, that's not off track at all. It's actually very related. It's kind of like a lot of the stuff we talk about in my chat is like what real love is, like what God's love is. And it's, God's love is not easy. It's not like you do getting everything right until a brick wall hits you, you know. And that's the same thing, kids and government. It's almost like all like living entities or whatever that move forward are kind of like, it's set up that way. That's you think easy, like really, if you make things infinitely easy, you kind of hate the person. It's like you're doing the worst thing for them.
What do you think of the book of Job?
I love the book of Job. I mean, first of all, I love the whole Bible. I read it almost every single day. But I really like the book of Job. I'm reading more of the New Testament right now. And every time I circle back to an old book, it teaches me stuff. But I mean, the interesting thing about Job to me is I've heard that it was the earliest written book, that it was written, that was actually written before the books of Moses. Not that it took place earlier, but I mean, it's just, you know, it's a lot about faith. It's a lot about not taking your eye off of what's right amongst tremendous social pressure. You know, his people are telling him to curse God and he wouldn't. So it's a great story.
You know, there's also like, just going through hard things alone doesn't actually help by itself. You know, you know, it's like, if you can be damaged by bad situations, you can also respond to them poorly. So, you know, I'm not saying that you have to go through like a boot camp of life either. You know, it's neither a boot camp of life nor just pure freewheeling. You know, I'm gonna do whatever I want. Kind of, you know, that kind. I mean, it's hard to balance. It's hard to balance, but you know, you need to be pushed enough and you need to push yourself enough.
Yeah. And because I mean, that's one thing that's very true about most kids. Like most kids do not have the ability they have to be taught the ability to push themselves. Cause it's comfort. It's like comfort. Life is like comfort to struggle. You know, it's like an arc like that. So they have to learn how to push themselves. It's very hard.
I think Franny's a pretty great kid, but sometimes, yeah, sometimes she can be like, you know, seeking comfort.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool, man.
She's 5 and a half. So I guess, you know, she might outgrow that a little.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, this, something will happen along those lines. So we got about 10 minutes left or so, and I'm just going to kind of read off some current events and just tell me, you know, kind of, you know, the big current events right now are, you know, COVID and the protests. So how would you deal with, okay, so you live in New York. Do you live in Manhattan or do you mind?
Brooklyn,
okay. Have there been, like, Manhattan I know has been, you know, destroyed. I mean, it looks completely different.
My neck of the woods. Right now, I'm actually my in-laws because it's got a very internet connection.
Okay, cool.
But so wait, let me show you that real quick. Can you see the arch there?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, that's what we call a Union monument. That's Grand Army Plaza. And there actually were quite a few BLM protests right out here.
Okay.
But I live a little further up the road. And I in a place called Prospect Lefferts Gardens, and you know, it's a very mixed neighborhood. And you know, it's kind of somewhat to purpose. You know, I used to be the president of the neighborhood association. It's very, you know, it's our organization had fought against redlining and, you know, gotten a big court victory early in its history, that kind of thing. So, you know, very diverse neighborhood, socioeconomically too, not just ethnically. But because, you know, we got this area called the Manor where there's a lot of private homes, and then we got mostly apartment buildings. So it's a very densely populated area, but you have people from, you know, different backgrounds, different, you know, incomes, et cetera. And I think that there's always, whenever you have a non-cohesive group, you know, not the same, not all homogeneous, you're going to have conflicts. But we've done, like, I, you know, how much of it is purposeful, how much of it is happenstance, we've done pretty well to be a community, you know. Mm. And I think that a lot of places, right, like Manhattan, I could never live in Manhattan. That's where you go for work. That's where you go to work. That's not, you know, and I think that it really matters. I mean, I've got, I don't want to jinx myself here, but I've got, you know, I've got a garden on the front porch, you know, and I've got tomato plants growing and all that stuff. And when I was younger, you know, during the bad old days, back when, you know, crime was high in the area, and you know, before we all, those of us who put, you know, were trying, and I should say mostly an older generation than myself, you know, before we worked with the police and made things better, you know, you wouldn't have something like that out there. You know, hell, we had our planters, which just had a couple of flowers in them, just bashed to shit when I was a kid, you know? Mm. But throughout all this strife, no one stole, someone just stolen a tomato, you know?
Sweet. Yeah. So
anyways, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That was my question. I was asking about your neighborhood, but what do you think about where it gets like really bad? Like, I mean, you know, this is one of the problems, is like you ask a Liberty person like me or you, like what they would do with if they were in government. It's like, I don't want to be in government. That's why I'm a Liberty guy. Or like, I don't want to be like telling people, but like where it's really bad, like in Portland or like, you know, in some like Seattle or whatever, you know, that's the whole debate is like, does Trump, do you take the city back by force or do you just let it happen? Cause they're sometimes letting it happen. Like it, now, I guess I won't even ask you about a different town. If your neighborhood got really, really bad, and the mayor didn't do anything about it and the governor didn't either, would you move or would you want federal intervention?
I would want the intervention, honestly. Yeah. You know, okay. I think, I would also probably want prosecutions for the, you know, for the executives,
yeah,
not protecting my rights.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that seems like, you know, but you know,
it's difficult because yeah, I don't like the idea of an occupying force.
No,
you know?
It's not good at all. It seems not good at all, but
there's, you know, what was it? You know, Kim Gardner in St. Louis decided to prosecute the McCloskeys when they, you know, kind of stood up to BLM, or mostly just stood up to people being on the property, really. It was a simple happenstance that who it was. And the fact that she decides who she likes and who she doesn't like, and that's how she's going to do the law. That's not equal protection under the law. I mean, it makes me think of, you know, John Adams, when he lost a good percentage of his law firm business, when he decided that he was going to take on some of the, not all of them, but a few of the accused murderers, the British soldiers in the Boston massacre. Mm-hmm. And that was because he was a big fan of the British occupation. He definitely wasn't.
It's principle. Yeah.
It's because, you know, to have a chance at a fair trial, that's what they needed. That's what they needed for equal protection under the law. And I don't think that, I think that we got so much of this, like, you know, the Frankfurt School has finally come to fruition, you know, the critical theory and trying to foment division in a place that should be happy. You know, we've got, you know, Marxism failed, and in the post-World War II world, everybody, you know, there's a chance for prosperity for everybody. And here we are, you know, what's the one thing that can make us unhappy? Feeling divided, you know, and you know, it's the identitarians who are the racists in this world.
Yeah.
You know? They're the ones causing these problems.
Yeah. It's very hard to, you know, it's very hard to solve, because I mean, I truly believe that the answer is going to come through social, cultural, or spiritual means. I mean, the government solution to this stuff is very hard. Like, imagine trying to like solve racism with government. I mean, any social thing, it's very, very hard. It usually backfires.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's also just push back, you know, like, why are you making me do something? Why are you, you know, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
They're always going to get like that. Like, almost everyone I knew growing up would say, I just don't like being told what to do. It was like one of the most common things for a kid to say, myself included, is that, mm-hmm. you know, the more you tell me something to do, I'm going to want to do the opposite. And that kind of sucks, but it's true. You know, mm-hmm. kids are kids, and you have a lot of rebels out there. I mean, these are like, it's crazy when you get to like 25 or 30, though. If you're still like a revolutionary in the streets, I get it. I'm pro America, and America was started on a revolution. I get it. There's different kinds of revolutions, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I used to actually, other than just my registration, be a Democrat. You know, I mean, I was like, you know, I believe that they were the party who, you know, I believe that the government was actually fulfilling its role of protecting our rights. I always believed in rights. I always believed that our rights are, you know, there's no point in being alive if your rights are not being protected, you know, if you're not standing up for yourself. And I've always believed that hasn't changed. It's just the perception, you know, having dealt with the government in my, you know, community roles and stuff like that, and seeing, you know, them getting in the way rather than helping and, you know, and then extend that to much more dire things like your right to be free, like not just the, like what, you know, oh shoot, I can't get the funding for this because blah blah blah. No, actually, your ability to walk about the earth freely,
walk, worship, yeah.
And so on net, the government does the opposite of what its basic purview is, which is to keep us free. We were not guaranteed to have safety.
Yeah,
not
guaranteed. Money. Yeah, safety, yeah. Money, possessions.
Protect me from a foreign invader. Protect me from the warlord. Protect me from, you know, the thug.
Mm-hmm. Theft, you know, death.
Let me be free.
Yeah. Wow. Well, last question before we get out of here. So in a second, I'll ask you to just say where to find you and stuff. But any plans to run for office, you know?
Sure. I've been asked that quite a few times before. Yeah. No.
Okay.
If anything, I'll tell you, I'll become a public school teacher.
Cool.
Maybe I'll like, fix things there.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. That would be a public, at least one classroom I would trust. That'd be one.
Yeah. Just got to see if I can get a job.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, Quest, thanks for coming on. Tell everyone how to find you on Twitter and things like that, and we'll get out of here.
Just at Quest Fanning, QUESTFANNING, Fanning, like, you know, like a fan.
Sweet. So, yeah, it's linked below the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. Really, it was a great chat, man. It was awesome. And thanks for popping by my stream as well. I see you in the chat there, and I really appreciate you like retweeting the stream and kind of promoting it and stuff like that.
I love promoting liberty.
All right, cool. Everyone have a great day, and this will upload as a podcast in a few days. Have a great afternoon, everybody. We'll be back at